Howdy, friends, and welcome into the Gridiron Frogs podcast as a part of TCU Horned Frogs on SI. I'm your host, Just Nolan, because you can't handle the Ruth, a Fort Worth area native with very interesting and peculiar ties to TCU. I'm joined by my partner in crime, JD Andrus, who co-hosts every podcast for this site. This is episode 14 of our show, covering TCU football and a smattering of other topics related. It is Monday, the 30th of September. One more sleep, and we can wake up Green Day. And at JD, I gotta ask you, it's getting dark earlier now, and this random question just popped into my head as I was getting ready for this. Do you like the later sunsets or the earlier sunsets more?
No, I hate the earlier ones because it makes me feel like I've done nothing throughout the day because I need to go to bed when it's dark out when I leave work. So, I'm not a fan of it. Also hate the cold. I absolutely despise the cold. Give me 110 degree heat over 28 degree weather. Unless you're going to give me snow. Texas doesn't give me snow, and it kind of makes you just not like the cold at all. Going to Boston in the winter is a top tier activity because they get real snow and it's not as cold there. But yeah, no, I hate wintertime. I hate fall. My scheduled tweet will go out on Wednesday morning about waking up Green Day. It's a yearly scheduled tweet I make for the last 10 years of my life.
It should be tomorrow.
Is it tomorrow?
Yeah. There's only 30 days in September.
God, I hope I booked my flight for the right day then. That could get very interesting.
Oh, no. You just made me think of my family, though, about talking about cold in Texas, because I was thinking about my family a couple days ago. They live up just outside of Chicago. And, you know, they come down once in the summer and once in the winter. And, you know, every time they come down during the winter, they get really, really mad because they're looking forward to warmer weather. And every time they come down, it's 24 degrees with no snow. And so they get really, really mad. People forget how cold Texas can get sometimes. We don't get the snow. Well, JD.
What we did get, though, Nolan, is you back to your normal intro, because I assume it's because TCU won, Oklahoma won. You had a good weekend of sports, right?
Hey, I was told by so many people in so many words to stop mentioning my Sooner fandom. None of them actually with killerfrogs.com. So I won't. I will leave that aside. I'll just leave the helmet right here. You can keep looking at it every time you watch this show. But yes, good week. And in my notes to start this off, I just have two words. We won. All right. Finally, monkeys off our back after two really bad losses. We won. We went into Arrowhead Stadium, which was not as full as I would have hoped, but what do you expect? It's Kansas. And we won. It was a tight game throughout. We ended up pulling it out by 11 points, 38-27, which I believe covered the spread. But it was not a pretty win. There were times in this game that I had my doubts throughout it, especially the way Kansas was really driving the ball early. The defense really, really kind of stepped up in the red zone later in the game, I felt.
Yeah. You know, it's crazy because I just did the Campus Tour podcast with Nate, as I am on every single podcast. He actually called me the voice of Killer Frogs, which I thought was pretty funny, and I might change my Twitter name to it.
I like that. I'm gonna change my intro every week to that.
Yeah. And we were talking after the episode we recorded, whatever. And I was like, yeah, he was like, hey, it was a good win this week. And I was like, it was a win. It wasn't good. I mean, it was good to get a win and get back in the win column, but it wasn't the win you wanted to see. Yes, I wanted a win. Yes, I'm happy with how, you know, the defense came to play. But I just think it was a sloppy win. And I'm still going to take it. And yeah, I'm going to sound like I'm just, you know, complaining just to complain at this point. But, you know, I think TCU could have won this game by a lot more than what they did. And I think that's kind of my issue with them is you're getting at the point in the season, and I know the Big 12 is wide open, but you kind of got to play dang near perfect the rest of the way to get a shot at the Big 12 championship. A win in 3 weeks against Utah goes a long way, but, you know, I think there's just still a lot of lack of discipline and mistakes that shouldn't be made this far into the season that are still being made.
Yeah, and you mentioned those mistakes. I mean, we turned the ball over three times. We are still far from perfect, and we are not going to win. I mean, you know, on paper we should kill Houston, but if we're giving them free possessions, you know, every other drive, then you know somehow the Cougars are going to have a game with us in the fourth quarter, and we can't keep doing that. What did encourage me was we averaged 7 yards a play, which was nice. 507 total yards. And I'm starting it right now. Okay. Jack Besh for the Biletnikoff. All right. It is happening. He's the best receiver in college football. I think he's proving that every single week. He's a very under the radar one, compared to what we thought at the beginning of the season. He had 131 yards receiving on 10 catches and a couple touchdowns. Hoover did look good despite the two interceptions, 356 yards. They pulled him three times to let Hoss Haney run the ball. Hoss Haney ran three times for 7 yards. And one of them really disappointed me because it was late in the game and he ran out of bounds. And in a time where we were actually shocked because we were managing the clock pretty well there late in the game. But just simple mental mistakes like that, we can't allow that to keep happening. And that's what I think. If Houston has a shot, it's going to be because we keep handing them opportunities like that.
Yeah, three things I kind of want to go over in that little statement you just put out was, one, if Oklahoma beat Houston, then TCU could beat Houston. that's a little shot at you. That's all that's for. The second one is Jack Besh is otherworldly right now. And to kind of talk about him a little bit, and I'm sure we'll talk about him more when we actually dive into the game. But I tweeted this out earlier. We did that he could be TCU's first Biletnikoff winner. Jack Besh currently accounts for 36% of the team's passing yards, 25% of all of Josh Hoover's completions, and 42% of the passing touchdowns. And it's crazy when you think about the fact that he's still technically the third option on this team. You still have Savion Williams. You have J.P. Richardson, who returned a punt this weekend. You have Eric McAllister, who's starting to get comfortable in this offense. Like, and you haven't even really seen the use of Drake Dabney this season. Like, Jack Besh
that disappoints me.
Yeah, Jack Besh is not the primary target still, and he's putting up numbers like this. And I'm interested to see what the angle will be if you try to design more plays to get him involved or you just continue doing what you're doing. Because I think continue to do what you do and you're in for a really, really good time. And there was a third point that I did want to comment on, and I don't remember what it was now. And yeah, I'm sorry about that.
It's all good. Before we dive any further, real quick, one note that I'm glad I just remembered. Congratulations, J.P. Richardson. First punt return for a touchdown in the game. He had three returns for a total of 111 yards. But that one, I'm sure he will remember for the rest of his life.
That was the thing. I remember what it was now. Is the Hoss Haney coming in. I love the fact that Hoss Haney's coming in, especially on third and shorts, fourth and shorts. Only thing I had an issue with was keeping him in for the immediate first down right afterwards.
Yes, absolutely.
I get what you're doing is that you don't want to make him a one-trick pony. But at the same time, Hoover was having an exceptionally well game at that point.
Yeah.
You run the risk of throwing him out of a rhythm, and I don't like seeing that at the time. But I do love switching it up with Hoss.
Yeah, they need to have him more as a situational quarterback like you would a third down running back. I completely agree with you. Anything third and four or shorter, I am totally with you 100%. But, yeah, don't get Hoover out of that rhythm by leaving Hoss in on first and 10 when, you know, you could probably throw a nice little slant or out route on first down, possibly pick up four or five and just keep his rhythm going. While talking about the run game, let's go ahead and talk about Jeremy Payne. I know that's something you've been looking forward to. You even teased it on Twitter before we started recording. 8 carries, 65 yards. Compared to Cam Cook's 15 for 61, Cam Cook did have the touchdown. But there's a 4-yard difference in average per carry. And, you know, we talk about me, I'm the eye test guy. Jeremy Payne almost seemed like he was running with more purpose, almost like he knew that he wanted to be the starting running back, and he knew that he could get more reps if he ran with that kind of purpose. And he sold me.
Yeah, and I talked about this in my article that just went live today. But what impressed me most about Jeremy Payne, and I believe this is what got him the reps, is Jeremy Payne came down in a third down situation, and it was an obvious pass situation. He came in, and he was playing blitz pickup, didn't run a route, didn't do anything, and laid out a Kansas defender. Just completely pancaked him.
It was
like
awesome.
Nothing. As a true freshman, he's 19 years old. And that's kind of what you love to see out of someone who's not even really getting reps in the running game, even though they've struggled, is still come out, play selfless football, and be able to do what the team needs. And I think that kind of helped him get the carries. But I'm kind of torn because I talked about it all fall camp. I talked about it all in this podcast about how in love I was with what I've seen from Cam Cook. But I also did mention Jeremy Payne a lot. Like, he ran really well. The issue was just that he was a true freshman, and this is kind of Cam Cook's year to come in and be the guy. And I did talk about it during the game and after the game. I still don't think Jeremy Payne should be the true RB1. I'd like to see a 50-50 split. Let's rotate them a lot more. Let's see if maybe Cam Cook just needs fresher legs, maybe just a change of pace running back. I'd like to see some things going on. I still think as a freshman that you don't want to shoulder all of the weight on this new look run offense on him.
I completely agree. I'm running back by committee. Excuse me. I've had dry throat all day, so I have my water here with me. But I completely agree. Running back by committee has worked for several different teams I've covered at many different levels, including at the college level. And you know what? Forget the haters. As an OU fan, it's worked for OU for pretty much my entire life. Really, since they lost Adrian Peterson, OU's done running back by committee since. So I think that always works as well. I really liked the way it looked. They actually spread the ball around a little bit. JoJo Earl got two carries, and he went for 21 total yards. Savion Williams had a carry for three. Dominic Johnson only got one carry for two. But I think we're starting to see the running game open up with more runners, and I'm encouraged by that. I'm always a big fan of when the offense does that. Let's switch sides real quick, because Jalen Daniels did not have his best game. And I think we got extremely lucky that he did not have his best game. So he just looked off.
It's his best game of the season. What are you talking about? And
wasn't his best game of wasn't the best game of his career. He definitely wasn't on.
You know, it sucks because, like I said, I hate being the guy that toots his own horn, but I did call it at the beginning of the season that I did think the Jalen Daniels hype was warranted. I just didn't think he was that great of a quarterback. And he had a 44%. Completion rate. There were a lot of times that, even at the end of the game when Abe Kamara just absolutely picked him up and suplexed him, basically. Jalen Daniels is like the eighth largest quarterback in college football, high end weight wise, and just decides not to put his shoulder down and truck through a smaller slot cornerback. Like, it just feels like Jalen Daniels has put way too much pressure on himself and is kind of under pressure that he needs to play perfect to put Kansas where they are. And I think it's getting to him a little bit. Because it's literally a tell of two different quarterbacks. You have Josh Hoover, who is third in the country in passing yards right now. Jalen Daniels is third to last in the conference in passing yards right now. Like, it just couldn't be a more night and day difference. And I think the fact that it was still an 11-point game isn't the best feeling. But,
no.
Jalen Daniels did – and I got to give credit to the defense. Andy Avalos, I don't think defensive play calling has been an issue at all this season. In fact, I love the defensive play calling, especially in the second half of the UCF game. There were multiple times, and I think at one point, Nolan, you and I were standing in the end zone when I said that was a great play call, and you just saw three TCU defenders get blitzed, and UCF just did perfect blitz pickup. Like, sometimes you just get beat. And, I hate to say TCU got beat for an entire second half against UCF, but play calling has been, I think, great. I think the personnel has just kind of been a bigger issue, and they finally came to play this week.
I completely agree with you that personnel is the bigger issue, but that to me wasn't a big problem this week, in my opinion. I didn't see anything too crazy with that. I do want to ask you one question, and I think we will probably have the same answer. I'm not betting on that, but we probably should have the same answer. Well, actually, pretty much every scoring play of this game was huge for both teams. Which one do you think was the most important?
Most important score?
Yes. Which scoring play do you think was the most important? We might have the same answer.
I mean, I think the only one I would have would be the very first touchdown by TCU, because it being able to respond that quickly, just kind of puts a lot more, or it put a lot more stress on a Kansas offense that hasn't been good at all this season.
I don't disagree. There's no right answer. I wanted to know what your answer was, because my answer is 17 seconds left in the first half, 7-yard pass to Jack Besh to make it 21-17. We don't score on that play, or somehow, I mean, you know, God forbid Limmerman misses one right there in that moment if we don't get a touchdown. We potentially go into the breakdown 17-14, and we came out flat in the second half, and Kansas just went right back down the field and scored to make it 24-21. And if we didn't score that touchdown right before half, we're looking at 24-14, and now we are on our heels. What are we going to do? You're down 10 with a quarter and a half left to go, and that would have changed everything else that happened that game. Of course, the punt return gave the offense another spark towards the end. Of course, the McAllister 59-yard touchdown pass, which was awesome, by the way. That, to me, that was my favorite play of the game. But you take away that touchdown right before half, it is a completely different ball game in the second half, in my opinion. I think that was probably the most important scoring play of the game.
Yeah. I've got a question for you now. So we did just talk about the defense. When Josh Hoover threw that interception, Kansas returned the ball within, you know, and it was now first and goal Kansas. Was your immediate reaction like, hey, well, here comes a Kansas touchdown? Because that was mine.
Believe it or not, no. I wasn't extremely disappointed with how the defense had been playing. I didn't think automatic touchdown. I was, because I'm a Cowboys fan, I'm like, I'm too used to that happening and up 3 points. Here we go. But my thought process was points. I didn't immediately go to touchdown, though.
Yeah.
The play calling for Kansas actually really helped me out there, too, because I did not agree with some of that play call.
I still wasn't impressed with the defense overall, because the biggest issue has been the third down opportunities. TCU's defense has been phenomenal at first and second down stops and setting down third down stops that are of 7 or more plus yards. 7 or more plus yards. Against Kansas, it was an average third down distance of 7.6. Do you know how many rush yards Kansas averaged on third down opportunities?
I don't see that. What was it?
8.4. More than their average down distance to go.
Yikes.
TCU has been great in first and second down opportunities, and it has been getting off the field on third down that has killed them.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, that's why my confidence was lacking. It was, TCU hadn't proven that they could get off the field in a third down opportunity, no matter the distance. It didn't matter what the distance was. Teams weren't afraid to run the ball on you. That's a bigger issue than what it was. But this defense finally came up and played. This win was on the defense. This win was not on the offense.
Oh, I completely agree. The defense did make the stops when necessary, including in those crucial times in the fourth quarter, especially those last couple Kansas drives had me a little concerned. But I also had eyes on a particular game in Alabama that afternoon.
And this is also, you know, I did give my flowers to Andy Avalos, and I'm going to give my flowers to Kittle Bryles because he deserves them for this game, because mm-hmm. I think he called a fantastic game. I think a lot of the issues that happened on offense were execution issues, but I think he called a fantastic game and he deserves the credit for that one.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a point and I just lost it. Anyway, TCU improves to 3-2. The two bad losses are behind us now. I think this is, are you willing to go as far as saying that this was a really good step in the right direction for the rest of the season? Or you think it's still a little early to tell and you're still a little shaky?
There's things we haven't talked about yet that I think put it in the good direction. Like we saw an offensive line change. Mike Nichols did not start at right tackle. Ben Taylor Whitfield did. And he played fantastic. Sonny Dykes talked about the offensive line being a lot more aggressive in this game. And we saw Jeremy Payne absolutely take that step up and potentially be the new RB1 for the year. We saw the defense play together well. but I think Kansas is still really bad. But I still think this game was a step in the right direction. And it, I think it kind of sucks because this is a confidence win for TCU. You're playing Houston, who's another confidence win, but then you have a bye week. And then you get Utah on the road. It's absolutely what they needed to go back to where they can be. And I think this team is still really good. I think 8-4 is more than capable of being on the table right now. You're looking at TCU was one half away from being tied for atop the conference right now with BYU.
Yeah.
So I think it's last week was an easy doom and gloom time. And now there's kind of a little bit of a realist, like, hey, you know what? The fact that they were able to lose the two games like they did doesn't strike much confidence. But seeing a bounce back win like this and seeing your coach coach an entire game and not get ejected is a great confidence boost.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that. There is a confidence booster. What you teased it. What else did you see that made it? Made you feel good about it being a good confidence and good right step for and I'm losing my words. Good step in the right direction.
Wow, which one are you talking about? I unleashed a lot there.
You teased that you had a lot of things we hadn't talked about yet. That you
done. It was mainly more the Ben Taylor Whitfield being slotted in at right tackle, which was really good to see. We saw Marcus Steele get his first ever start as a redshirt freshman on the defensive line this week. Sonny Dykes talked about last week in the press conference that this week they were going to open up the opportunity for players to be slotted in and have the opportunity to start who hadn't started earlier this year. And I think, you know, a lot of times coaches will say that then nothing has changed come game day. But to be able to see actual changes happen, especially on the offensive line, it's a really good thing that it's like, hey, you know what? They were really working hard this week. They had great practices. I think it was just it's a really good sight to see whenever you're still scrambling to find the answers, because I'm going to say something and it really, really hurts me to say, but like SMU just kind of might be good. And losing to UCF, like that game sucks, but like you dominated. You literally beat yourself. And SMU might just be really good and you got off to a bad start and still made it a respectable game. Like, still might be a really good team.
Yeah, for our listeners, there was a certain game going on in a little town called Tuscaloosa that everyone was so focused in on, and I think I was the only one who on my laptop had another tab open, and I texted our group chat and I said, is anyone else paying attention to a certain ACC game? We won't spend any more time on it, but yeah, the Ponies absolutely took Florida State to school, and
Florida
that
State's
was
also really bad.
Florida State is also really bad.
Like Florida State legitimately could probably lose to Houston right now.
They're bad. Yeah, they're really bad. That was really, really bad. Let's talk about what went on in Salt Lake City, because that really shook up the entire conference. We were talking about potentially one game and we're even with BYU.
One more thing.
Go ahead.
Two things I want to talk about left before we talk about is the fact that TCU for the first time, but both of these stats are going to be excluding the LIU game because I don't include them in my stats, but this is the first game all season TCU has had less penalties than their opponent, and
notice that. Yeah,
this is the first time that TCU has had a time of possession on a drive that's been longer than their opponents. So really
that's
good
huge.
Things to see, really, really big changes that, you know what, little steps at a time, right? Like, yeah, maybe your time of possession was only 8 seconds more than what Kansas had, and you only had one less penalty, but that's still a step in the right direction. So I think it's just it was a good overall. It was a great win to see, but it's a building block win. It's not, this is where you need to be.
No, of course. And that was why I asked that question earlier. to the rest of the conference, the Utes got upset by the Arizona Wildcats 23-10. What is Utah hiding from us about Cam Rising? He's been game time decision.
I saw a stat today and it kind of blew my mind. Since tearing his ACL, Damar Hamlin has played in more NFL games than Cam Rising has. I'm starting to think Cam Rising isn't real.
This is a man that died on field. And
yeah. and almost killed Tua. I'm starting to think Cam Rising isn't real anymore. I'm also starting to think Isaac Wilson isn't Isaac Wilson. It's Zach Wilson in different clothing. There was just a bad game overall by Utah. And this Arizona team might be the most confusing team in the country. Yeah. Their defense actually looked really good, which hasn't all year. And their offense was still, you know, decent against a good Utah defense. But I think anyone who's saying that that puts to bed that the Big 12 has any really good teams is like, there's a chance a lot of teams can be really good at one time. It's a possibility.
Yeah.
I don't think Arizona's good. I still don't think there's a lot of good Big 12 teams, but like, I mean, I still think you're going to take Utah. If Utah's a healthy Cam Rising, they're still the best team in the conference. But if Cam Rising exists.
Exactly. I'm still not convinced he does. Reminder for our listeners on that game, this is an Arizona team that's coming to Fort Worth later this year. So have fun trying to sleep tonight, keeping that in mind. Iowa State, who, by the way, before I move on to this one, if the season were to end right now, Iowa State and BYU would be the two teams in Arlington. That really deviates from my preseason rankings of these two teams. I find that very, very disturbing in a way.
Nolan, is BYU good?
I don't know. I really haven't paid attention because I didn't think they would be good.
I don't think they're good.
Okay. I think they played. I'm taking your word for it.
Kansas State's defense is awful, by the way. Their defense.
BYU almost did choke against Baylor.
Kansas State's defense is really bad, and they had their worst game of the season against BYU. And BYU needed special teams miracles to pull that one out. BYU also beat an SMU team that was trying to establish a quarterback situation. I still don't think BYU is good. I still think Iowa is very decent. They got a very, very veteran labeled team, but like they're still not great. I think there's a lot of teams that are very inflated based off who they played. Like Baylor had more people on the sideline than Baylor had in the stadium, and Baylor still almost made a comeback. Like
I saw that. That was sad. Wow, yeah, that was
bring
sad.
Out the tarps.
Seriously. This game had a lot of implication on who we could possibly see in Arlington now that we're a quarter of the way through the season. Not only did Kansas State win, Oklahoma State didn't really have a chance. I'm pretty sure we are watching the end of someone's career with Alan Bowman. And I will eat crow and say that I'm a – what's that thing they like to do on the Thanksgiving games on Fox for the pregame? They like to call themselves Jive Turkeys. I'm a Jive Turkey on this one. I really, really got to backtrack on what I said about Oklahoma State at the beginning of the season. I think their conference title hopes are done. And Colorado spanking UCF.
Can I say something about Alan Bowman?
Yeah, go ahead.
How are you going to be in your seventh season of college football and Oklahoma State just put up a graphic saying you just reached 10,000 yards in your career? You have to average 1.4 a season? Josh Hoover did that in the first four games of the season?
Like, remember, this is a man whose lung collapsed twice.
Okay, but...
I'm going to play devil's advocate here.
How are people going to tell me that Alan Bowman was this great quarterback? When was he ever great, Nolan?
When he was at Grapevine? That was about it.
Yeah. And even then, he beat up on Fort Worth schools. Like, that's not saying much.
And he couldn't beat Alito. Alito beat him twice.
All right, here we go. Is the mute button again? I don't want to talk about the Colorado-UCF game. Because
all right, we don't have to talk about it.
This defeats my narrative of UCF being the second best team in the conference.
Dude, if I just had to backtrack on Oklahoma State, you can backtrack on UCF.
I still think UCF is the second best team in the Big 12.
All right.
I stand by it.
After getting beat by 27 points. And Texas Tech survives Cincinnati and storms the field in Lubbock.
Brother, what are we doing?
That's the most Texas Tech thing ever.
You got Washington State storming the field after beating San Diego State. You got Texas Tech storming the field after beating Cincinnati. Who, by the way, if I get one more comment on my Twitter page saying that Brennus Soresby is the next coming of Andrew Luck, I will delete my Twitter because I don't understand the hype. I'm sorry. Like, I get
I
it.
Don't
You
either.
love your guy, but.
Oh, man, that's ridiculous. Well, that's where we stand as of now. Going into week six, and we will do our preview show tomorrow, and it will be out the following day. But, yeah, as of right now, the two teams in Arlington would be the Iowa State Cyclones and the Brigham Young Cougars. So have a good night's sleep tonight, Big 12 fans.
Is Kansas State good?
I want to believe so.
Is Ollie Gordon going to be in TCU purple next year?
There's a good chance. There's a good chance. We will save that for another podcast, though. That will wrap up our, what was this, week five? Our week five recap podcast that is number 14 for us. You have a look on your face like you want to say one more thing.
I'll save it for my 90 seconds on a Miles podcast.
Are we doing that for this one, or you want to just do that for...
Let's do the preview one.
Preview. Okay, so you only get the 90 seconds for previews.
Yeah, because recap's dedicated for the last week. Can't talk about my 90 seconds then.
Okay.
It's got to be looking forward. Something to resonate with fans. And I'm going to let you know.
It's about you, Texas Tech. It's about you.
I love how you went into the mic for that one. All right, Frog fans, that does it for the 14th episode of the Gridiron Frogs podcast as a part of TCU Horned Frogs on SI. Thank you for tuning in, listening, watching, and however you find your podcast. We will see you tomorrow with another great show previewing week six as the Horned Frogs prepare to take on the Houston Cougars on a Friday night, which is stupid. And until then, for my partner, JD Andres, and everyone at Killer Frogs, I'm Nolan Ruth signing off. So long, everybody, and rest in peace, Pete Rose.
Hey, yeah, thanks for listening.